Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
When Albert Wood of Baltimore thought back to his time serving in World War II, he asked a pretty provocative question. Why did they draft me if they didn't want me? Wood was a member of the 320th Barrage Balloon Battalion, the only all-black combat unit that fought on D-Day. His battalion landed on Omaha Beach under withering German fire on June 6, 1944. But what the black soldiers did that day has been lost to history until now. A new book tells their story. It's called Forgotten, the untold story of D-Day's black heroes at home and at war. The author is Linda Hervieu, who's with us now. Linda, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, writing this book, you met several of the men who served in the 320th. Can you tell us about them and who they were?
These men were, for the most part, the ones I found concentrated in a ring around Washington, D.C. And they were one of four all-black battalions chosen to learn to fly barrage balloons. And this was the Army's latest defensive weapon. And they trained at a camp in Tennessee, specially built to train men to fly these balloons. There were about 30 white units that trained during the war. And the 320th Barrage Balloon Battalion was one of the four all-black units. Mm.
And you recorded some interviews that you did with these men. Let's hear from Albert Wood. Here's what he told you.
For one reason, I ain't had no reason to go fighting because the Army, the American wasn't that good a place to fight for. That's what I thought. Not for a black man.
Albert Wood talking about some of the racism that he faced while he was in the U.S. military in the 1940s. And I think we forget how completely racist the U.S. military was at the time.
Yeah, the Army was really racist to its core. Everything about the Army was set up so that African Americans were not only segregated into units that were headed by white men, but they were completely sidelined in terms of responsibilities. They were relegated to service and labor battalions. They unloaded ships, they cleaned ships, they cooked, they did laundry. What was interesting was, even though this was the Army that was available to these men, so many of them still signed up.
And black officers faced quotas and ceilings to how high they could actually get in the service.
Yeah, exactly. I tell the story about one of them, a pre-med student from West Philadelphia, who would go on to really achieve glory on D-Day. He would eventually be nominated for the Medal of Honor. And he came through Officer Candidate School. Officer Candidate School was one of the few realms of the Army that was integrated. And the reason for that was the Army didn't think that black men were smart enough to get in. So they didn't bother with the expense of setting up a separate system. The Army at this time was basically two armies, separate facilities in every way. In the realm of officer training, though, it was integrated. However, when these men completed their training, what they found was they weren't allowed to serve in units in which white officers were junior to them. And this really limited their chances and their opportunity to succeed in the Army.
So this was a Jim Crow Army. And then when the 320th goes abroad, they arrive in Britain. And all of a sudden, the atmosphere for the black soldiers in Europe is completely different than it was in the United States. The U.S. military tried to export Jim Crow essentially to Europe, and it didn't work.
No, when these men landed in Britain, they were stunned to find that they were welcomed as Americans, and they were treated as the white Americans were, and that was as very welcome guests, as essential allies who were in Britain to help, you know, bring an end to this war. They were invited into homes. They were invited to worship in churches. In fact, people couldn't believe that they would even doubt that they would be welcome in the churches because, of course, none of these men had ever set foot in a white church in America, even those from the North. And they really brought life to many corners of Britain, and relationships were developed, especially in this area of southern Wales that I write about, where these men were really treated like Hollywood stars. They were just the highlight of the towns. I mean, children followed them. Girls went crazy for them.
Yeah, the women actually liked them in some cases better than the white GIs. But why do you think that is? Why do you think they were so well received there?
One of the reasons was that they were just so very polite. So the white soldiers wore out their welcome in many parts of Britain quickly because they were very dismissive of the wartime privation and all of the things that the British were lacking. The black soldiers were so thankful that they were given such a hero's welcome there that, by and large, according to all of the reports I read, they never wore out their welcome. George Orwell, in fact, wrote about it. George Orwell was writing for a newspaper in London, and he wrote that the only Americans with any manners were the black Americans. And having an American boyfriend, if you were a girl in one of these towns, was like a windfall. There was lots of cigarettes and real cigarettes and candy and fruit and cans and all of these things that the British had not seen. Much to their surprise, what the African Americans found was that they were the number one pick. They taught all the girls how to do the Lindy Hop and all these other dances, and they were just the most popular in the towns where they were in, at least the towns that I did reporting in.
And the white GIs were not pleased about this. In fact, there were cases of violence against the black U.S. soldiers in Europe. But let's talk about what these men did on D-Day. As you mentioned, they flew these barrage balloons. Here's a clip from a History Channel documentary about the battalion. This is William Dabney of Roanoke, Virginia, talking about what it was like to handle the balloons.
We was all trained to handle these balloons. You would send those balloons up on the cable and that lit it up and bring it in. It was something like a canister bomb, and it would pull the bomb right down into the wing of the plane, and boom, the plane would blow up.
So, Linda, this was an important job, but for most of us, we don't really use these in the military today in the same way. So just describe what these men did with the barrage balloons on D-Day.
Well, the job of a barrage balloon was to fly in a field of other barrage balloons, sort of in a sawtooth pattern like a curtain, over important sites. So they flew all over monuments and defense facilities in Britain. They flew on the west coast of America. Right after Pearl Harbor, they went up all along the west coast when we feared a Japanese invasion. And on D-Day, they were brought over to Omaha and Utah beaches by members of this battalion who were scattered in groups of three and four along with the infantry. And they landed, and their job was to get these balloons flying as soon as the small arms fire had been suppressed on the beaches. So the idea was these balloons would go up. They were going up on winches. They were flown from the ground, and they would fly as a deterrent to enemy planes. So if an enemy plane came to strafe, there was a cable, basically piano wire, that tethered the balloon to the ground. And an enemy plane risked having the cable catch on a wing and snare it as if in a spider's web. And that could stall the plane and crash it. But the balloons that went to war, unlike many that flew over defense installations on the West Coast, these balloons had bombs. And they were small bombs that would detach as soon as the cable was struck and could come down, and it could cause a good hit could cause a gas tank to explode.
It is amazing. No African Americans received the Medal of Honor for bravery during World War II, let alone on D-Day. And you mentioned one man, his name was Waverly Woodson, who was nominated but never received the medal.
Right.
When you spoke to these men, were they bitter at all about their experiences of racism when in their service?
Yes, they all were to varying degrees. Albert Wood from Baltimore, the one in the clip you played, he was one of the most bitter. He told me discrimination was the worst thing that ever happened to me. He came from Baltimore. He was terrified to go to the Deep South. They trained in Tennessee because he had heard stories of what could happen to men there, how they could be, you know, kidnapped and put on chain gangs and all of these things that did happen. But men from the South had a different view. The ones I spoke to from the South told me, you know, this is how it was in the South. We knew this. So it wasn't a surprise when they went into the Army and the treatment was as bad as it was. It was just another part of life.
There's this line in the book where you say that over and over, the men mentioned the movie Saving Private Ryan, which is probably what many listeners might think of when they think of D-Day, the movie with Tom Hanks. And they say that in that movie, there was not a single black man depicted in the battle that day. Why do you think this story had been so forgotten?
Well, the conventional wisdom had it that there were no African Americans at D-Day. Why this happened, I can't tell you, but it is the story of war in America. We didn't know about the Tuskegee Airmen, the hero black pilots, for decades.
Till the 90s.
Until there was a TV movie made about them, and then that's when you started seeing interest in them again. There was a study commissioned by the Army in 1995 about why no black soldiers were awarded the Medal of Honor in World War II, and the researchers, they were independent researchers commissioned by the Army, and they said that pervasive racism was to blame. And because of their findings, seven black soldiers received the Medal of Honor from Bill Clinton in January 1997. Waverly Woodson was not one of them. And I make the case in the book about how it's not too late, and there is a campaign now underway to try to get it for him based on the findings in this book.
Well, the book is called Forgotten, The Untold Story of D-Day's Black Heroes at Home and at War. Linda Hervieu is the author. Linda, thank you very much for this, and thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.